Dom Flemons, a frequent guest in the past on Unreal Bluegrass, is back today. You will hear part one of a visit with Dom. Last year, Dom released an album that's got so much attention, so many accolades, Black Cowboys on Smithsonian Folkway Records. We're going to hear from Dom in the second hour. We're going to talk about how that album came to be, what he's been up to. Dom is one of our favorite guests on Unreal Bluegrass. Part one of a wonderful visit with Dom Flemons, the American songster.
Happy to welcome back one of my favorite performers, and I can explain it in detail later on, but I haven't talked to Dom Flemons in a while, and there's so much to catch up on, Dom. There's so many things going on, and welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass.
Well, I'm so glad to be back speaking with you, Steve. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and yeah, and it's been ages, man. Congratulations on all your success, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I figured, Dom, there's so much going on, but I thought a place to kind of give us a focal point to circle back to is the album that came out last year, Black Cowboys. There's a lot of things that happened in and around that time. But the Black Cowboys album, which I have, and I featured it, some songs from it on Unreal Bluegrass, came out in 18. It's on the Smithsonian Folkways album, a label which is absolutely perfect for the project. They do that. They allow artists to fill the pages of a book, literally and figuratively, but and there's so much that's come from that album since it's been released, but let's just talk and kind of use that as a focal point, and then we'll catch up with what you've been doing since I haven't called you forever.
Yeah, well, I guess, Steve, I'll start it off with, well, around 2014, when I put out my album Prospect Hill, when I started to think about my big game plan, I put Prospect Hill out, and then I did an album called What Got Over for a Record Store Day, and then I was working in England a lot, so I put out an album called Ever Popular Favorites with Martin Simpson. And always, to me, the next project was going to be Black Cowboys. And I've had this idea since 2008. I was going back home to visit my hometown of Phoenix, Arizona, via I-40, which is the road that took me from Phoenix to North Carolina in the first place. And I stopped off around the Painted Desert National Park, and I found a book called The Negro Cowboys by Philip Durham. I found it in the gift shop. And for all of my life growing up in Phoenix, I'd never really thought about Black Cowboys as being a thing necessarily, like most people. But I had a personal story of Black Western migration from my own family on both sides, my mom and my dad's side of the family. So I kind of had a sense of African-American culture as it is now and how it developed over the decades. But when I started to read this book, The Negro Cowboys, I found, first it mentioned that one in four cowboys who helped settle the West were African-American cowboys, working alongside the Anglo cowboys and the Mexican vaqueros. And for me, as an African-American and Mexican-American person myself, I found this to be an intriguing notion. And this book just really laid out the elaborate history of the West and African American as well as African diaspora, especially when you get back to, you know, like colonial Spain and kind of the early history of the West. I mean, it just really just changed my whole outlook on the West compared to what I had seen in most movies or most cowboy films or country and Western music.
Or even books, even just popular books on the topic, Dom. And you are someone who's very attuned and very aware of cultural issues and the movement of music and culture, and yet even for you, that was sort of like you knew it was there, but maybe gave you a broader stroke of how much there really was to involve yourself in.
Absolutely. And then on the musical front, so first it started with the Negro Cowboys, and that just intrigued me, just to understand that there was a much deeper African-American history in the West. And the next part was I came across an album called Black Texicans, which came out on Rounder Records. It was part of the Deep River of Song collection, which features John and Alan Lomax's field recording collection.
Okay.
And so there's a chapter called Black Texicans, and in the introduction, Alan Lomax talks about the influence that Black Cowboys had on his father's early cowboy song collecting. And so to really think of the Lomaxes field recordings. Of course, if you think of them going into, again, Negro folk songs and black folk song documentation after working with cowboys, just to think of African-American cowboys within their collecting originally, it actually becomes a natural extension of the work they were already doing. So in that way, I thought that was an interesting notion. And they have field recordings of black cowboys that they recorded out in the field for the Library of Congress. And aesthetically, I was able to hear a very powerful message that was being told with these early field recordings. So I started juxtaposing those two ideas, the history and then the musical aspect. Then one other part of the music as well was the black songsters, people like Leadbelly and Henry Thomas. And even people like Bob Wills, if you think of country and western and cowboy music, you start to find these moments, just like other parts of the South, you find interactions between blacks and whites that are musical, and they create this sort of new notion of what popular music can be and folk music. And so the western culture is no different than that. And so I just decided to explore 18 different stories of the West through this this album, which ends up making a great double LP.
It is. And the other thing, too, the label itself, Smithsonian Folkways, I have had guests before that have come through there, and I think the last thing that I had with Kaya Cater, she had done a Smithsonian, and so pulling all of her family history into that. But there's been others, and there will be a new one coming up soon. And Dom, we chatted about this a little bit off the air, the last Mike Seeger documentary project on Smithsonian. They allow the artist, and you would be it's such a great fit for you because you put the thing together. You wrote the liner notes, and so you're always imparting all that knowledge, and there are recorded songs, there's talking as you're explaining, which I just thought, what a perfect concept. Dom Flemons, Black Cowboys and the Smithsonian Folkways, and it couldn't be a better marriage for the arts.
You know, and I had the great honor of also celebrating Smithsonian Folkways' 70th anniversary with my album coming out. So it was also a very significant year for Smithsonian Folkways. And having been a fan of Folkways and Smithsonian Folkways as both entities for years and years, when I brought all this information into one pool of papers and CDs and everything like that, trying to figure out how to do a project around it, I just knew that Smithsonian Folkways was going to be the perfect home for it because they have a lot of great Western albums, poetry as well as music albums. And I knew the African American Legacy series was a part of Smithsonian Folkways because I'd been connected with the National Museum of African American History and Culture back in the early days as they were building the museum up. So I knew that the Legacy recording series had not had many contemporary artists on it. And so I pitched Smithsonian Folkways to make Black Cowboys the first contemporary artist record on the African-American Legacy series. And so in that way, I was able to reinvigorate this history of Black Cowboys, but I also could kind of take a contemporary approach to it and really create a an album that tells a creative statement that I wanted to craft with the arrangements and the songs and also the way that the story kind of flowed between songs. And so they were really amazing being able to work with Pete Reininger, who was the engineer on it, and then also the former director, Dan Shahey, co-produced the record with me. The current director, Halb Shippers, has been amazing, as well as John Smith, the associate director. So it's been a really amazing experience to work with the staff at Smithsonian Folkways. And also, they did the Herculean job of finding all of the wonderful Western collections, that all of the historic photos were used within the liner notes.
There's such great photographs.
And that was something that drove me in this project, Steve. I just knew that an overview of this history and some of the imagery and iconography that I could find that was out there, it's such a rich history, and I just barely scratched.
I was just going to say, you're just really scratching the surface. You stole my words, but I bet you could do this project in a different you could do probably several follow-up in a series, because you can only with, what, the 18 cuts, I think that's what I remember, that's what you said. You really are just beginning to look into it and open these things up and open these doors and windows up for other people to learn what you're learning. I just can't imagine. I don't know if you got anything else planned. Maybe down the road somewhere in the future you'll do a follow-up. I don't know.
Yeah, that's something that I just thought from the beginning. I know that I'm going to be returning to this subject matter soon. I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to go into it yet, because there are so many facets in which to reach into and to be able to contextualize and to reanalyze. I mean, it's been really interesting, because the second half of my touring now around this album has been the follow-ups that all the different museums that have their own local Western history have wanted to present within their museums. And so I'm doing a lot of musical performances in Western museums that have collections that might represent diverse history of the West, but they haven't really had a situation in which to pull out those pieces of their collection. And so it's been a really beautiful give and take. Like, for example, I went to a place in Oklahoma, the Gilchrist Museum in Tulsa, and they had an exhibit on a comic book character called the Chisholm Kid. And so he was a black cowboy hero who was in a daily Sunday comic strip from 1950 to 1954, and it was a black cowboy hero. And so he was the
local Don, fighter. Did you know that before you started this project, or did you learn it as you went to the Gilchrist?
Well, what was funny about it was the first time I had seen the Chisholm Kid, but the first time I heard about the Chisholm Kid came when I called my good friend Taj Mahal.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I asked Taj Mahal, of course, the famous blues singer and world musician, the maestro.
Yes.
I asked him about where was the first time he had seen black cowboys, because in a lot of his early records, Taj has the full cowboy garb on.
Yes.
And so I just asked him about it just to see what he'd say, and he mentioned the Chisholm Kid. He said that his father used to get the Pittsburgh Courier back when he was growing up in Massachusetts, and it was part of the Sunday Daily newspaper strip that he grew up with as a kid. And so that was something that kept in his mind. So when I went to the Gilchrist, they had big prints of the comic book, and so I bought my copies of them, but then I sent an extra one to Taj, and he was just down, gave me a call, and just was so glad to have this childhood memory come back to him. But it was a beautiful exhibit that they juxtaposed next to the beautiful Frederick Remington painting of the cowboy of color that's running in the rain, the very famous.
I think I've seen that.
And it was really just beautiful, because another guy they had was Sonny Rollins, his album Going Out West. They mentioned that he did his album Going Out West because of the Chisholm Kid. So they had
I didn't know that, because it's one of my favorite albums, and Sonny Rollins, for the listeners of this program, one of the greatest saxophone players, jazz musicians ever, and he does this album, and every time I look at it, I think, there's Sonny in a suit out in the middle of the desert. And I'm thinking, does he really look comfortable there? And he does Way Out West. He does some really Western songs on it, some tunes on it. But I had no idea that was the motivation behind it. I've had the album forever. I had no idea.
Yeah, and that's the sort of thing that, again, to be able to shift it back into sort of the musical ideas around this album, Steve, is that you have, of course, country and Western music as a genre, and there's an African American history that's within country and Western, or bluegrass, or folk, or any roots music. But then you also have a bigger cultural phenomenon of African American cowboys and rural culture.
Yeah.
That's a bigger cultural phenomenon. So it's kind of like two stories that can overlap simultaneously while still being completely separate from each other. And so I tried to figure out ways to musically bring these ideas together in an album. And it started with the two songs specifically that had black cowboy stories, Home on the Range and also Goodbye Old Paint. And those are songs that have actual stories connected to them, like Home on the Range. John Lomax collected that from a black cowboy who was said to be a Buffalo Soldier. And wow. And he sang a variant of Home on the Range for the Wax Cylinder recording, and that's the variant that is the Western National Anthem we know it now. And I reached into the early recordings of Jules Verne Allen, the early singing cowboy, as well as Vernon Dalhart's version of Home on the Range, and they distinctively have a different variant on the melody. Because when people hear my version on there, they're gonna say it's a slightly different melody, and that's what I found so interesting when I heard the recordings, is they had a different melody than the normal melody we would think of for Home on the Range, and that was something I tried to create an arrangement that would, because the idea is this the original melody or is this another melody, and so I tried to go with that. Goodbye Old Paint was the same thing, where the nature of the original field recording of Jess Morris, done by John Lomax, playing Goodbye Old Paint, has this very archaic melody, and I kind of straightened the melody out a little bit because it was a real crooked tune, because it's the original field recording is just solo fiddle and vocal, and I changed it just a little bit to be a nice two-chord melody and maybe an occasional third chord in there, and in that way, I tried to do something close to like something between like a blue version of a bluegrass, like blues and bluegrass in a type of way with the lift, kind of like Bill Monroe would do those high lifts and the hiss thing. I tried to evoke that sort of sound when doing Goodbye Old Paint, just to evoke that really powerful lyric, because that's the thing about both of those songs. The lyrics are so powerfully set in place that they... you know, they're very moving. Even for me performing them, they're very moving.
And see, this is exactly why, Dom, that I miss you coming through town. And I will tell everybody listening that if you get a chance to see Dom Flemons perform, he doesn't talk as much as he's talking now, but you do get a lot of great music. And you also offer explanations as you go, so that you can't possibly go see Dom Flemons, whether he's touring through museums with in support of the Black Cowboys or the other things that he's working on, you get great music, and you're going to learn these names, and you're going to learn these little things that might put you off in another place and have you develop your own interest and find out more about someone that you've already mentioned. You mentioned Lead Belly, which probably everybody that listens to this program knows of. But, for example, some of those names... I take little notes when I'm talking to you, and when I leave a program or show that Dom has done, I have names in my head that I want to find out more about, because you're always connecting that tissue of our history and our culture to the music, and nobody does it better.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, Steve. You know, that's been one of the things I was really fortunate. You know, someone that I got to see early on was Dave Van Ronk. I got to see him when I was about 18, and I guess he passed away maybe about 7 or 8 months afterwards. It was really his very last gig he did in Phoenix. And the way that he presented his show, of course he did magnificent music, but he had these great stories. And for Van Ronk, he told this great story about seeing Clarence Williams when he was growing up, seeing Mississippi John Hurt, a story about Bob Dylan, a story about Gary Davis. And as for someone who was... had heard of these names, he really enabled me to let my imagination go a little bit farther into the music by his personal connection. And through the anecdotes he told within his concert, I just found that I loved the music even more. I was interested in the sounds, but Van Ronk was telling me some extra information that I might not have known otherwise. And that's something I've always tried to convey in my shows. And of course, since we're interviewing right now, I'm talking a lot more than singing. but I try to make sure there's a good balance in the program.
I know. I just wanted to make sure they know that he's not going to talk this much, but you're going to get this information. But since we're talking and not playing and talking, we're talking at length. But every time I've seen Dom, which has been many times, I always learn something new, and it's from one song to the next, and where this came from, and that to me is so whatever you got from Dave Van Ronk, that I'm glad that you got it, and you do it so well, and that's just part of, to me, the experience of seeing you perform, is you're going to learn all this history, you're going to learn this instrument. I remember when you finally got your hands on, I forget what you named that banjo that has
Big Head Joe.
Yeah. I think I saw you right after you got that, and now it's like always in your hands. But so you had the story about that, and you play all kinds of different pipes and flutes and different instruments and the bones, and it's a phenomenal experience to see you perform in this. The Black Cowboys is yet just another example with more liner notes and more information and pictures and everything. It's gotten so much attention since you released it.
Yeah, I've been just really fortunate in that way. I mean, it did take me 2 years to make the album wholesale. I mean, the recording was it wasn't necessarily a long recording period, but writing these notes and making sure that the writing was airtight. Because again, when I pitched it to Smithsonian Folkways, I just didn't want to fool around, and because they're an institution, an educational as well as a federal and private institution of the United States, I felt compelled to really make sure that the writing was as clean and as solid as possible. And again, before we put it out there, I sent it over to the African American Museum and Dwandalyn Reese, who does the curating, as well as many parts of the staff. They read through it as well, and because I mentioned the Pullman Porters, they were glad that I brought in the Brotherhood of Sleeping Cars and some of that deep history of African American history that's literally in the museum. Again, I wanted this album to be something that if you went to the gift shop and wanted to find something on Black Cowboys, this would be your foundational document, and that it's good for children as well as for adults. So I tried to be universal without being too. I tried to be really like open-ended and holistic about it when it came to making it a very foundational, singular piece that could just be an introduction to the whole idea.
That's a great way to explain it, because that's what it is. You even have there's some spoken words.
Yeah, well, you know, I went to the National Cowboy Poetry Gathering in Elko, Nevada, and they hired me on right around the time I started doing the project, really going into the development of everything. And I found that I had a bunch of information from the past, but I really didn't have a way to bring it into the contemporary world of cowboy poetry. And when they invited me, I met Willie Matthews, the wonderful Western artist who did the cover. And when I did my very first performance, I remember he pulled me to the side and he said, "My name's Willie Matthews. I'm a Western artist, and I'm going to paint the cover of your record." And I said,
okay.
And he just and it was like being in a movie, you know, because he's like, "I'll be back in 15 minutes. I'm going to shoot some pictures of you, and then we're going to do this painting." And I was like, okay. And it was like I went to the bar, and it was like people were like, "Willie Matthews is going to paint you. Do it, man." And it's, everybody up the whole saloon said, "Do it. It's Willie Matthews. You got to do it." So I did, and of course he had done a lot of work. He worked with Dan Hicks very early on, and worked, and he was a protege of Robert Hunter from Quicksilver Messenger Service. That was one of his big inspirations.
Oh, wow.
So he had done a lot of cover work. So I mean, he made that fantastic cover. I met Don Edwards, the legendary cowboy singer.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I got to see a whole performance of him, and that changed my life. Sourdough Slim and Robert Armstrong, the wonderful cowboy musicians, they were there. And Andy Hedges, who's a wonderful young guy who's been working with Ramblin' Jack Elliott a whole bunch. I was able to connect with them over at Elko. And everyone had their own stories of Black Cowboys that they presented to me. As I put my idea out there, I was then given the approval of the National Cowboy Poetry community, as well as I got a big boost from the stories I was given. After having talked about the Lomaxes for so much, I was made aware that Jack Thorpe, the very first person to write a cowboy songbook, not professionally as an academic, but as a self-published author, his cowboy song collecting began when he met a series of Black cowboys out in New Mexico. And so for their genesis of cowboy song collecting, it goes back to Black Cowboys again. And then, of course, Jack Thorpe also wrote Little Joe the Wrangler, which I feature on the album. And so they directed me toward Jack Thorpe's autobiography. And this is a brilliant story of Jack Thorpe going into the cow camp and seeing a bunch of Black cowboys sitting around the campfire. and there was a song that they were singing that drew Jack Thorpe in. And Jack Thorpe was a banjo player, so he played a mini five-string banjo.
Yeah.
He calls it a banjo mandolin in the book, but scholars have said that he had a banjoreen. So he would play a little banjo, and then they taught him a little banjo. And so they were singing a song about their horses, and it inspired him so much he wrote it down. But then he found out that no cowboy knew more than two verses to each song. And so he then made it a point to try to write down these special type of cowboy songs because he thought that they had a tone that reflected the loneliness of the West and the wide open spaces. And when I started to read it, I was like, he's talking about the blues. He's not really, he doesn't have a word like the blues because it's kind of too early for that. But this idea of the blue note, the high lonesome sound that really, that little extra something that, of course, in the 20th century would build a lot of the roots music we all know and love today. But I started to read that, and that also gave me an impression of how I wanted to do some of the traditional cowboy songs. And, of course, Ramblin' Jack Elliott did Tie Knots in the Devil's Tail for years, and I had to pay tribute to him, as well as Gail Gardner, who was also one of the original cowboy poets. And so it ended up giving me a whole other layer to work with in terms of material as well as sort of the institutional backing, because I was able to bring together the Library of Congress, the National Cowboy Poetry Gathering, as well as Smithsonian Folkways and the African American Museum into a single package. So it really, again, it was very rewarding to do that, Steve. I just was so pleased that, one, that the idea came to me to do it, and then, two, that now that it's out, I've been so glad to see the reverberations of the album going out there so quickly.